Morning again. So today we're going to, the name of the talk, I think it in your bulletin says the science behind the silence, but it's really the silence behind the stillness. Not, yeah, really the same thing, okay? And, you know, it really comes from this idea of my always wanting to know more about what's behind the concepts that we learn in the whole realm of Christianity, like, you know, having faith. Just have faith, you know, like, what does that really mean? What's the dynamics behind that? And this idea, the science behind the stillness, deals with the idea that in unity, Charles Fillmore defined metaphysics in five different ways: cosmology, theology, psychology, science, and mysticism. So when we look at the metaphysics in unity as opposed to, say, the metaphysics in philosophy, ours covers five different areas, and science is a very important part of that. So, you know, we're going to look at, try to understand a deeper understanding behind Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. So the key is, what is the science behind the stillness that makes up the practice of stillness so spiritually potent? All right, so what is the concept behind it? And there's going to be three concepts we're going to look at this morning. By the time we get to the third one, you might be getting kind of woozy, but just hang in there because, you know, you can always go to the internet and listen to it over again, right? So right from day one of Unity Center of Light, we proclaimed that our purpose for being was to raise consciousness by educating folks to know about the power that exists inside of them. And it's interesting, yesterday in this session we were in, we were talking about cultures and how different churches have different cultures. And I also brought up how the same thing, I read an article in Fortune magazine that says corporations have different cultures. So when I worked for Grumman Aerospace and then went right to Ford Motor Company and then to Xerox and to IBM, every one of those companies had a very different unspoken culture. You know, you sort of had to pick up on it right away. So it's the same thing about coming into a church. And it'd be interesting for us to have a discussion in a family meeting about what do we think the culture is of Unity Center of Light, you know. So anyway, but our thing here is about raising consciousness through education. And Deepak gives an in-depth look at the nature of this innate power within us. So we say there's a power within us far greater than anything that exists outside of us. And he explains it as being the space in between the vibrations. Okay, so what is the stillness? It's that space in between the vibrations. So vibrations being all the activities that are so common to our everyday lives, our thoughts, feelings, emotions, our words, our behavior, our actions, all contribute to the way we vibrate. Does everybody understand that? You know, so, you know, you may be vibrating in one way because something exciting is happening, and then you get another piece of news and the thought, and you deal with the feelings, and you start vibrating. So what he's saying is that the stillness is a space in between those vibrations, okay? So, you know, as we are in motion, thinking what we normally think, doing what we normally do, we are caught up in the movement of the vibration that is created by our life activities. Does that make common sense? Okay. All right, so Deepak says there is a space in between the vibrations that is called discontinuity, a place where there's a lack of logical sequence as we would perceive it. All right, so discontinuity means we basically have a continuity to what we do. You know, you get up in the morning, there's probably a common process you go through, right? You know, as you go through your day, there's a common process, there's a continuity. But this space in between the vibrations is that place of discontinuity, what mathematicians would call, it's a point at which a function is undefined, sort of like the explanation that God is a name for the undefinable. So we can't really define God, so we just call God, God. All right, and that takes in a whole host of thought processes, but even if we added up every thought in this place that we had about God, if we added up all the thoughts, it still would not even come close to what God really is, because God is that which cannot be defined, okay? And so in essence, God is discontinuity. Is that, okay, you gotta stick with me, right? Okay, all right, so what is this place in between the vibrations, this place of discontinuity? Well, it's a place where pure potentiality or infinite possibility exists. In other words, nothing in this place is yet defined, but at the same time, it's waiting and available to be defined. You with me? So when we say the Father knows what you want even before you ask, meaning the Father exists as pure potentiality, your asking gives shape and continuity to pure potentiality. So the Father doesn't know that you want a new car specifically, but the Father, the potential for that exists, and as soon as you ask, it begins to formulate. Is that okay? So our consciousness is always affecting this discontinuity or this infinite potential that's waiting to become potential, okay, become manifest. So the discontinuity, the place in between the vibrations created by our mind, our feelings, our emotions, our life activities, is a place that sustains and enriches any idea that's projected into it. Any idea. Okay? So in Unity Center of Light, we describe it as that place within us that is far greater than anything exists outside of us. Why is it greater? Because it exists as pure potentiality. Okay? So when we say, you know, there is a power inside of you, there is a power inside of you. And in quantum physics, we'll actually prove that. There's a power inside of you that is far greater than anything that exists outside of you, because that power exists as pure potentiality and is constantly reacting to what you are thinking. And more than what you're thinking, what you're what? Feeling. Okay? So how do we enter into this place in between the vibration that's created by our thoughts, feelings, emotions, and life activities? Well, the psalmist explained it in Psalm 46:10. He said, "Be still and know that I am God." He is telling us that by being still, the stillness is the place where God is. All right? Okay? So God is that space in between the vibrations, meaning God is discontinuity and becomes continuity or continuous manifestation through us. Each time you enter into the stillness, you bring a bit of God back with you, but what this bit of God turns out to be in your life is totally dependent on you. And you know, it's interesting, even if you don't practice meditation, you do practice the stillness. Because you heard me talk about the levels of conscious beta, alpha, theta, delta. Okay, you remember I said it, beta is what you're mostly are in right now. Some of you have already gone already. You're already on the alpha. You're somewhere else. Okay, you know, delta is that rapid eye movement, and then the last level is coma. And at night when you sleep, you do go through all of those levels. Okay, but when you find yourself having drifted off and really kind of lost consciousness of your environment, you have slipped into that alpha state. You're beginning to move into that space in between the vibrations. So whether you do it purposely or not, you are constantly doing that. The key here is to learn how to do it on purpose, to be conscious of the fact of what you're doing. So let's explore a little bit this idea of being still as the way of entering into the space in between the vibrations, the space of infinite potentiality, which actually is explaining, how can I know God? Someone says, how can I know God? Well, you can know God by entering into the space in between the vibrations, learning how to enter into the stillness. So in previous lessons, we talked about the importance of detachment as a critical practice for moving towards God consciousness. Okay. Now, what does this mean? You know, what does the idea of detachment really mean? Well, it is said that the highest form of human intelligence is to be able to observe yourself without judging yourself. Okay. And the way to get to that place where you can do that, you must be willing to do the work to become detached from the hypnosis of your social conditioning. And right now, we're all hypnotized. There's things we believe about ourselves that, oh, yeah, no, this is just how I am, and there's nothing I can do about it, right? And that's been years and years and years of social conditioning that we've taken on as how I am. It makes me think of that movie with something about God. It was a comedy, and that silly guy, Jim Carrey, thank you. And he had this thing of, because when he was God, he got all these different, he could know everybody wanted, So he said, well, let me make Post-its out of them. Of course, the Post-its then covered everything, including him, right? But see, that's what happened to us is that, you know, we go through life and people say things about us and it's like they put a Post-it on us. You know, and they say something else and put a Post-it on. We got all these Post-its on us and we don't realize Post-its, they peel off. But we walk around all of our lives with these Post-its and we just never take them off. So, you know, we are the way we are because of all the myths, the drama, and the stories of our lives that we have taken on and now believe that this is our truth. And so our work on the spiritual path is to do the work necessary to detach ourselves from all the negative, fearful, false ideas we believe about ourselves. And this includes all the negative I ams that we heap upon ourselves. You get that? You know what I'm talking about, right? Okay. And yes, we can complain that others have put a lot of that emotional stuff on us. But in the end, we are the ones who chose to believe it and took it on as truly being our story. You know, and again, parents, ministers, doctors, you know, on and on and on. I'd just like to tell you, the first day the young lady in my class introduced herself, says, you know, my name is Kimmy and I am a diabetic. And I'm disabled. She said, I'm disabled and I'm a diabetic. And I said, do that all over again. And I said, she said, my name is Kimmy. I said, stop. That's it. That's all. That's all you need to know. You know, but that was her whole way of describing herself. You know, and, you know, we might look at that and go, oh, yeah, but I wouldn't do that. But as soon as we open our mouths, we'll do something that'll be similar. Okay? All right? So just as we chose to take on these stories, we're the only ones who can choose to detach from the negative social, emotional conditioning of our past. And yes, I understand that it's easier said than done. I know that it's not easy, okay? But what if you identified one negative past socially conditioned thing about yourself to let go of? Just one thing. Because remember, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15:31, I die daily. All right? And what he's talking about is dying every day to some other negative aspect of himself. Okay? So it's a process you have to work on one day at a time. And the reason this is so important to your spiritual growth is that the nature of your consciousness determines your concept of God. Okay? And your concept of God determines your relationship with God. So if you find yourself dealing with fearful, negative thought processes about the various aspects of yourself or your life, for example, worrying about your health or your financial well-being or your relationship or whatever it is that you're going through, your relationship with God also takes on that fear. And this is what this is what causes us to say things like, why is God letting this happen to me? And God's not letting that happen to you. We have to understand we are doing it to ourselves, okay? And this, you know, this idea of the choices we made that caused us to be so fearful, you know, we're not saying this is a condemnation because it's just the way we have been, right? We have lived most of our lives asleep, totally asleep, okay? Remember, and so we're still living the Adam dream. Remember? Adam and Eve knew was that they were pure God consciousness, and then they fell asleep. Jesus, the second Adam, and I know I've stated this many times, but it's important to remember, came to wake us up. Okay, he's still shaking us. You know, wake up, wake up. All right, but you know the fact that we live our lives asleep, we take on stuff. I think I told you the advertising industry knows that you see 1,500 advertisements a day. They know you do, but they know you see them but don't see them. And see, reality, they don't want you to really see them because then you could block them out. But if you're seeing them and not conscious of the fact you're seeing them, they're implanting stuff into your head and causing you to do things and you don't really know why you're doing it. Okay? So the whole key here is, how do I wake myself up? Okay? So this idea of the choices we made that caused us to be fearful, it's not a condemnation. Remember, the idea that the highest form of human intelligence is to be able to observe yourself without judging yourself, okay? It is a removal from your mind and heart of negative self-judgment that initiates your movement towards salvation. And what is salvation? It is the restitution of our mind, body, and soul back to our spiritual birthright, that being that we are sons and daughters of the Most High. So every time you're thinking negative, you know, poor little old, you know, maybe the plum disease, poor little old me, okay? Every time you're thinking those thoughts, you are putting yourself into a deeper and deeper sleep and, you know, dreaming this dream that you're separate from God, dreaming your dream that you're not a son or a daughter of the Most High, okay? So the word restitution means to return or restore to a previous state of consciousness, which, of course, is saying that we are divine, but through social conditioning, we have forgotten who we truly are. And that's the whole key, is we've forgotten who we are. You know, it's like your mother would say, did you forget yourself? You know, right? And the answer to that question is yes, right? And so we move towards being less fearful by releasing one fear at a time. We eventually become more and more peaceful when we do that. And as we become more and more peaceful, our relationship with God changes from being one based on fear to a relationship based on faith. And the more connected we are, the more peaceful we are. That's why Jesus, you know, he's with all the folks, but every now and then he'd have to slip away, okay, go up to the mountaintop. And that slipping away, going to the mountaintop, he was going to a higher state of consciousness. He had to refuel, right? I mean, our cell phones, you have to what? Plug them back in. During the day, we use them for everything, okay? But the point comes, you have to plug them back in, and that's what that process is about. So the more connected we are, the more peaceful we are. So basically, I cannot have a peaceful relationship with God if I do not have a peaceful relationship with myself. Okay? And as we all know, if I don't have a peaceful relationship with myself, I don't have a peaceful relationship with you. Okay? And again, that goes back, you know, and many of you keep me, this is one of my sort of basic things that I live my life by that came from Vince Lombardi, football coach, and you know, those who are in Prosperity Plus saw me talk about it, where he said to his football players, to be on my team, the first thing in your that's important to you is your relationship with God. The second thing is your relationship with yourself. The third thing is your relationship with your family. And last comes football. He said, if you don't put it in that order, I won't get 150% of you on my field, you know? So that's the idea, is creating that hierarchy of relationship within yourself. And once you evolve to the level of having a peaceful relationship with God as a result of your daily work to let go or let die some fearful aspect of yourself, the next level is where you are now able to eavesdrop on God mind. See, the more peaceful you become, the more you're able to eavesdrop on God mind, and we know this is called intuition, okay? So to increase your intuition, to be highly creative in your life, you have to create a greater relationship with God, and you can only do that by becoming more peaceful, okay? So intuition is where you're able to know or sense something as being true without the need for rational processes that we normally go through. Not only for something to be true to us, we have to go through this whole rationale in our head to make it true, okay? But when you have intuition, you just kind of know it. It just comes to you. So in other words, instead of going through the intellectual processes that you normally go through, it's that suddenly you know what you need to do to accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish in your life. It just comes to you. Who's had that experience? You know? But the key is to put yourself in a position where that's always happening. You're always in touch with this process, and no matter what comes up, you're at peace. All right? And it'll work for you in the smallest things to the greatest things. You know, I had this past weekend, I'm on a committee hiring new people at the college, and I was supposed to be at a meeting at 2:00. And I don't know what my mind was thinking because I was working on other projects, and all of a sudden on the computer came up and says, 5 minutes until the meeting. I'm still at home in my, you know, raggedy stuff, and I jumped up and threw my stuff on and shot out the door, and I'm jumping in the car and racing up the road, and something in my mind said, clear, said, turn around and go back. You don't need to go to the meeting. I'm like, no, I got to go to the meeting. Turn around and go back. You don't need to go to the meeting. I'm like, all right. So I went back home, and all day I'm thinking, you know, why would I told not to go to the meeting? And then when I got there the next day, I found out it would have been a waste of time for me to come to that meeting. You know, all what I was told had happened, I really didn't need to be there. Okay, so I'm just saying, it'll work for you in all kinds of situations if you're just, you know, constantly in tune with that idea. So in the, you know, at this point, you know, you're beginning to enter into, you know, when you have done the work and spending time in the space in between the vibrations, be still and know that I am God. When you've been doing that work, you start to enter into the discontinuity. So you move out of the continuity into the discontinuity, out of the manifest into the unmanifest. So you're starting to enter into the pure realm of infinite potentiality. You get what I'm saying? So now you're in that space. So you're like the Albert Einstein, and when people say, well, how did you get that idea? He says, I don't know. It just came to me. You get it? That's where you want to be. You want to be in the space of discontinuity. So the space, you know, we talked about earlier in between the vibrations, the vibrations that are caused by your normal thoughts, words, and actions, you want to have time when you step out of that and just into that space in between that, okay? So this is space of discontinuity or infinite potentiality and possibility. It's what Jesus called the kingdom of heaven. So when Jesus said, you know, enter into the kingdom of heaven, that's what he was talking about, the space in between the vibrations. And like he said, you know, he says, once you find this place, it'll be the greatest treasure you ever had. You will sell everything that you have in order to get into it. Now, sell everything that you have means every thought you got in your mind. You know, not your physical stuff, just like when Jesus said to the rich man, you know, sell all that you have and follow me. And the rich man went away sad because he thought he meant to give up all of his possessions. And he's not talking about that which is already manifest. He's talking about what's in your head, what's in your consciousness. Okay? You want to be clear and open. It's almost like the simple thing of those, you know, who understand effective listening. So effective listening, somebody's talking to you, you got nothing going on in your head while they're talking to you. Nothing. You're not thinking about the answer. You're not judging what they're saying. You're not doing anything. You're not thinking about how it affects you. You're not doing anything. You are just being there for that person. Everybody knows that concept, right? Well, it's the same idea, okay? So when you're working with God, you don't want to have anything going on in your head, because as soon as God gives you an idea, a God idea is going to cause you to go, what? You think I can do that? It's going to cause you to judge the idea because it's going to be bigger than the idea you ever thought of before. Does that make sense? Okay, so again, it is a space of universal divine substance from which everything in the universe comes into manifestation, again, what quantum physicists are calling the unified field, okay, in which we what? Live and breathe and have our being, okay, and in this space in between the vibrations is where you become a co-creator with God. So how do I become a co-creator with God? Well, it happens through what scientists call the observer effect. Okay? Now, here's a quick explanation of the observer effect. Fundamental to contemporary quantum theory is the notion that there is no phenomenon until it's observed. Phenomenon being the existence of something that is perceived by the senses. So again, you've heard me say that before. Some of quantum physicists say that as I'm looking out this way, there's nothing behind me but quantum soup. When I turn around, then I see, you know, what's there. You're saying, you're going, no, there's something behind you because you're looking that way. You're creating what's behind me. You get what I'm saying? And quantum physicists are saying we're constantly laying our world out by through the process of observation and what we believe is going to be there, okay? So he goes on to say the implications of the observer effect are profound because if true, it means that before anything can manifest in the physical universe, it must first be observed. Presumably, observation cannot occur without the preexistence of a consciousness doing the observing. So the observer effect clearly implies that the physical universe is a direct reflection of consciousness. So stuff that's going on in your life, you're rolling that out. I know that, and you've heard me say this 1,000 times, right? But we're rolling it out constantly. We're rolling it out collectively and individually. Okay, so as Dr. Carl Jung I think it was Jung. I'm forgetting now. But Jung talked about collective unconscious, the collective unconscious. So unconsciously, we're creating a lot of stuff, but consciously, we're also doing it as well. Now, here's a next part of it. It's just for fun and something to think about. There is a delicious irony in this theory because contemporary Western scientific theory postulates that human consciousness is solely the result of the working of the human brain. Yeah, that's what contemporary science say, all right? Yet the observer effect, if it is correct, the physical matter comprising the brain could not come into existence unless it was the subject of observation by some pre-existing consciousness. Did anybody just head explode? All right. And that's what scientists, or even you talk to your doctor, you probably say, oh yeah, consciousness is in your brain. No, it can't be in the brain. All right, it's greater than that. It's more than that. The brain is a result of consciousness. Okay? So according to the allegory in Genesis, God, the space in between the vibrations, thought us into existence, and we as co-creators with God are constantly thinking our own life experiences into existence. See, the process just keeps continuing. Okay? So the problem has been that because we did not know what we were doing, our haphazard ignorance caused us to create some turmoil as well as some good. But now we don't have any excuses, and now we know. Okay? We know. And so we know it's our responsibility to constantly keep higher level thoughts going on in our mind. Whatever that takes for you, whatever that looks like for you, is to keep your higher level thought. No matter what is appearing in front of you, you still must hold that higher level thought. All right? And as I said in a previous lesson, we do not always give our utmost for God's highest. Okay? We do not give our utmost for God's highest, and if we don't, if we do it, good things will happen. But if we don't give our utmost for God's highest, we know that things can get sometimes pretty ugly. You know? But we always want to give our utmost for God's highest. No matter what is going on, we want to think the highest thought, be the highest thought. You know, be the example, the demonstration. We talked in a class yesterday with Reverend Pat Bessie that we are all modeling. We're all modeling, okay? You know, I tell my students all the time, they come into class and they're sitting there, and I said, you know, they're pretty enthusiastic now at this particular point in the semester. I showed them, you guys in the class remember the third week video where the French chef? Well, I showed that video to the class. And I showed them the whole thing, Mary Modesty and the French Chef, and when it was over, they looked at me, and these are 18, 19, 20-year-olds. They said, that was the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life. They were just on fire after that, right? You know? So, I mean, but, you know, now that they have seen that, you know, they can't let that go. You know what I'm saying? That'll have an effect on them. Now, they'll still be the same, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, but over time, that's going to have an effect on how they operate in life, you know? So, you know, when we become proficient at remaining detached from the negative vibrations we create, we become more loving. Let me say it again. When we become proficient at remaining detached from the negative vibrations we create, we become more loving. And when we become more loving, we become more peaceful. And when we become more peaceful, we become better able to enter into the kingdom of heaven awareness that Jesus was pointing us towards. You see, it's a process. You just can't go, oh yeah, okay, I'm gonna enter into this kingdom of heaven consciousness. There's a process to it, okay? There's an elevation you have to go through in order to get to that level. So self-observation through detachment is the way to God consciousness. Self-observation through detachment is the way to God consciousness. What detachment looks like in practice is this. Some contentious situation happens. You react. But instead of submitting to your reaction as you usually do, you mentally stand back and observe yourself without judgment. You get it? Because stuff's going to happen. We are going to react. Right? But as soon as you see that you reacted, the reaction is a key for you to, it's a sort of a signal, go, oh yeah, I am reacting to this. Let me step back now and watch myself and try to understand, why am I reacting that way? So now all this stuff now, it's not like you're not being, you're watching. You're observing. Even if you don't come up with an answer or anything, it's just the practice of not getting, not drowning in your own stuff. You know, where you said, I am, and you add that negative description. Is that making sense, everybody? Okay. So it is work. So it's during the process of self-observation without condemnation that you position yourself to enter into the stillness, which is the space in between the vibration created by the reaction. Let me say that again. Okay, so it is during the process of self-observation without condemnation. You're now observing. You know, yeah, wow, look at how I responded to that. All right. And when you do that, you're positioning yourself to enter into the stillness, because you're not vibrating now at that thing that just happened. You step back and you're watching it. And as you're watching it, your whole being calms down. And when your being calms down, you're positioning yourself to step into the stillness. Okay? And that's the space in between the vibration that was created by your reaction. Does that all make sense to you guys? I mean, I'm a teacher now. This has got to be practical so that you know how to go out here and do this. All right? So the reason you're striving to enter into the space in between the vibrations is because you're trying to discover where this turmoil, this fear within you is coming from. Our old self would automatically say it's because of him or her or this or that. Okay? But as Deepak says, the person or situation you're perceiving, now listen carefully, as being the cause of your fear is really just an electromagnetic field of energy within your own mind that has created an image you're projecting out as being the person or thing that you're fighting with. In other words, it's not really there. It's all in your head. It's an electrostatic thing going on. It's a vision going on in your head. And so you're saying, oh, now that I got it, let me project it out here, and now I can blame it because it's out there. It's that person. It's that thing. It's that situation. But he says it's all electromagnetic stuff that's going on in your head. It's not real. But if you believe it's real, you better react to it. Because it will go upside your head. but you do get the point of what he's saying. And so, again, that gets back to Sigmund Freud's thing of projection. You know, we have our own fears, our own dynamics, our own energy, and because we can't own it, we project it out onto others and say it's because of you. And that's Freud. He said that's a defense mechanism that we use, okay? So the idea being, if you can change the image in your own mind, the outer projection will change as well. If you can change the image in your mind, that which you have projected out will change as well. Because quantum physics says it only exists because you are observing and holding it as being in existence. And I know that's deep, but you didn't come here to hear little kindergarten stuff, did you? Okay, all right. All right, so the practice of detachment removes you from the excuse that he or she, this or that, is the reason I am the way I am or the way I am feeling. It takes away that excuse, right? You're not using that anymore. If somebody says, I'm sorry I made you feel bad, you say, no, you did not. You know, I made this choice, and I have to deal with this, okay? All right? So now, here's the next level. You ready? I think this is level 3. You holding in there? Okay. So the next level beyond co-creation is the archetypical domain, the archetype being an original model or type of something after which other things are patterned. So Jesus represents God's idea of man and expression. That's Fillmore's definition. Jesus represents God's idea of man and expression. So meaning, if you say to God, God, how should I be? God would say what? Be like Jesus, okay? But as Jesus kept telling us, he is not the only begotten Son of God. We all are. And it was his mission to show us a way back to our original, our archetypical selves. He said, archetypically, you're the Christ. That's the pattern after which you were designed. But you forgot that, and so you created this other I am thing. And that's the idea of the crack in the cosmic egg meaning that in the center of our being is the Christ, but we created a shell with all these I am expressions. All these I am ideas, a shell got thicker and thicker and thicker until right now we think we're the egg and don't realize that the yolk, which is the Christ, is where we really are. And so we're constantly doing things to try to crack that cosmic egg so we can at least peek in and get an idea of what we look like. And all of us had done it at one time or another. Have we? You've gotten that peak. But the ego didn't know how it happened, so the ego's going, ooh, I got to get back there, just so it can claim that it's that, and that's what's keeping us from doing that, because the ego can't claim it. It wants to claim it so it can do what? Brag about it. Guess what? I'm the Christ. I saw it. So at this level, the archetypical domain is where we are capable of allowing the Christ consciousness expressed by Jesus to incarnate within us, okay? Now, in other words, at this level, we are awake enough to consciously submit to the fact that there is one power and one presence active in my life and affairs. See, right now, we say it as an affirmation, okay? But we're trying to get to the place where we are at a level of consciousness or awareness. Let me say a space of awakening, of being awake enough to submit to the idea that really there is only one power and one presence. We have to submit to that idea. You getting it? Okay, and allow ourselves to become it. So as it's expressed in the prayer we do, Father, into thy hands I submit my spirit, soul, mind, and body. At this level of conscious awareness, we're not just saying these words, we have actually become the submission, meaning the mind that is open and receptive to God's living spirit of truth. This is probably where Jesus was when he proclaimed, I and the Father are one. He had completely submitted to that idea. Okay? And beyond this level is a sense of oneness with the whole universe. There was an episode in Star Trek years ago where Corporal Broccoli was his name. He had become hooked to this computer, which gave him infinite knowledge. And somebody said what was going on. He says, I know everything, and I know it all at the same time. He had reached the point of a God mind, okay? And you can be there, we can be there too. But to be there, you have to really be comfortable in the discontinuity, in the space in between the vibrations. Right now, we're only comfortable in the vibration, okay? So before we bring this to a close, it's important to understand that the approach to spiritual enlightenment taught by Jesus requires personal experience. The typical religious approach is based on what you're capable of believing that someone else told you. The minister said it. The priest said it. So you say, oh, this must be true because they said it, but you've had no personal experience with it, okay? So spiritually, however, spirituality is based on what you are capable of experiencing for yourself. So if I say to you, practice detachment, the practice of detachment is the way to enlightenment, what I'm actually doing is inviting you to try it for yourself rather than take my word for it. You know, it's like if I said to you, boy, green smoothies are really good. Kale and broccoli, and you're going, oh, I don't know, I said, taste it. And you go, ugh, that's horrible. But now you know. Yeah, you know because you had the experience. So it's the same thing with any spiritual idea you hear. It means nothing unless you take it out and you work with it, you practice it. So Jesus taught and demonstrated from his experience, the ultimate act we know of is when he allowed himself, listen again, allowed himself to experience a crucifixion and resurrection so he could give us positive proof that we can survive the crucifixions in our lives and resurrect a new being in Christ, okay? And blending what Deepak said with Paul's statement, I made up this particular page, is if you do not choose to die daily, you'll continue to be out of sync with the flow of the universe. You gotta let it happen, all right? So starting today, begin the process of identifying at least one fearful aspect of yourself you feel you need to let go or let die, and do the prayer work necessary to enter into the space in between the fear-filled vibration we have, so you can allow God to lead you to your true self. And so it is. Amen.